Good afternoon, America. Welcome to Mark Levine's Inside Scoop on Washington, bringing you all the news from the nation's capital that the government does not want you to know. If you live in any decent-sized American city, probably even smaller mid-sized towns today, and you go downtown, you're likely to see a homeless person on the street, maybe in some corner trying to keep warm with coats and blankets, maybe out there with a sign, "We'll work for food," maybe holding out a cup, jingling, asking you to give. Well, who are the homeless? Who are these people? How do they arrive in that situation? How much does public policy have to do with it? Is it a fact that national policies are causing more people to be homeless? How many of them are mentally ill or on drugs? If we give them money, will they just use it to buy alcohol, or will they use it for their own good? What's up with shelters? Do they provide enough for the homeless? A number of conservatives believe that the government should stay out of it and let churches and so forth provide for the homeless. Are they providing for them? Are they getting a decent meal, decent shelter? These are very difficult questions, and that's why I wanted to devote the entire hour today to studying the problem of the homeless. And to do that, I've invited a guest who knows more about it than practically anyone. His name is Michael Stoops. He's the executive director of the National Coalition for the Homeless. And Mr. Stoops, I want to welcome you to the Inside Scoop.
It's great to be on your show.
Let me give out the phone number so that anyone who has a question can call in. The toll-free number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP, or you can always comment on the blog. Just go to www.radioinsidescoop.com, click under the topic homelessness, and I will be reading some of your comments on the air. Mr. Stoops, it's obviously a very large problem. It's one that we see every day, and I got to tell you, most of us have no idea what to do, either as an individual passing by someone who's looking for change or on a grand scale. You've obviously devoted a lot of your life to helping the homeless. Tell me, who are the homeless? I mean, where do they come from? How do they arrive in this situation?
Well, homelessness has been a major issue in America for the last 25 years. There are 800,000 Americans who are homeless tonight, and over the course of a year, 3.5 million Americans experience homelessness. The numbers have been increasing. We've seen both poverty and homelessness increase, especially in the last 3 years. When we think of who are the homeless, we think of the guy with a sign by the freeway, or the beggar or panhandler on the street. But for every person you see in that situation, it's like the tip of the iceberg. There's another 9 people who you don't see. 40% of homeless people in this country are comprised of families. 25% of the overall homeless population are children under the age of 18. Veterans make up, right now the numbers have been going down, but they're gradually going back up, but veterans make up at least 11% of the homeless population, and we are now receiving reports, unfortunately, that there are veterans coming back from our 2 current wars who are becoming homeless in America. So it's happening to a lot of people. Single men and single women are still the largest number. And I think the sad part about homelessness in this rich country is that we've grown accustomed to walking by people who are living on the streets of downtown America. And that's unacceptable, and that's why the National Coalition for the Homeless has been working as hard as we possibly can to end homelessness in this country.
Let me break it up piece by piece. You said very interesting to me. You said, what percentage are children?
25%
Now, it's true. You say it's the tip of the iceberg. When I see homeless people, it's usually a single. It's usually male. Oftentimes it's black, though not always, and usually trying to get some money for food or something. I don't see the children on the street. Where are they?
Well, the majority of homeless people in this country are not in shelters or on the streets. Part of the reason is there's not enough shelters in this country. There's not enough affordable housing. There are 6 times as many animal shelters in America as there are shelters for people.
So wait, again, let me repeat that. 6 times as many animal shelters?
As shelters for human beings in America.
Wow.
And we believe in sheltering animals, but we also believe that homeless people should be sheltered too. The majority of homeless people in any community is not on the streets or not in the shelters. They're people who are doubled and tripled up, living with family and friends, people living in a Motel 6 room meant for one person, but a family of six has been living in a motel room for months and months and months. The two fastest growing segments of the homeless population today in 2005, the one is women with children, which has been historically true for the last decade, but the newest fastest growing segment of the homeless population is what Senator John Edwards talked about when he ran for vice president last year, the working poor. We have the working homeless who are working full-time or part-time. 42% of homeless people worked the previous month, but their wages are so low they cannot find affordable housing.
Again, that's an interesting statistic, and I just want to underline it. You're
right.
Telling that almost half, 42% of all homeless people worked in the past month,
yes,
but simply didn't earn enough to pay for shelter.
Right. There's no area of the country where you could work at minimum wage 40 hours a week and be able to afford housing. In fact, the average nationally, you would have to work 100 hours a week at a minimum wage job to be able to afford housing. And that's why we have so many of the working poor winding up homeless in our society.
Mr. Stoops, I want to bring a caller on the line. Caller, you're on the air with Mark Levine and Michael Stoops.
Mark and Michael, this is Dave out in California.
Hi, Dave.
Hi, Dave.
Talked to you a few days, but I think the obvious reality that just can't be ignored is that where this administration has to choose between helping out the poor or helping out the billionaires, we know the way it's going to go, and it is in every way possible. That billionaires are benefiting greatly from this, and the middle class and the poor are being crushed. And I think that's a reality that just has to be spelled out as clearly as it can. That's what they're all about.
Mr. Stoops, have we seen federal money for homeless go down in the past 4 years?
There has been a slight increase over the last 3 years. During the Clinton administrations, the federal homelessness budget doubled, and there's been slight increases during the Bush administration. But the Bush administration right now is proposing in their budget submitted to Congress to cut the Section 8 housing programs, to cut homeless programs, food stamp programs, the low-income energy assistance program that helps people pay their heating bills during the winter months. So the Bush administration is cutting programs that help poor people, and they're trying to cut programs that help poor people to subsidize tax cuts for the wealthy and to pay for the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. But our federal government today is only spending $1.4 billion, a little over $1 billion, to support local programs that help homeless people. That's a drop in the bucket. You could spend that amount in the Bay Area of California, San Francisco, and there would still be people on the streets. So our governments are not spending enough money. If the private charity system, the churches, the synagogues, the nonprofits could have solved homelessness through volunteerism and acts of mercy, they would have done that 20 years ago. So it's important that the city, county, state, federal governments, and the individual citizens be involved in addressing this issue.
Dave, do you have a further comment?
Well, you know, to me, churches and small missions and all are just going to be devastated because they're not going to raise the minimum wage. They will not extend unemployment insurance. Everything is like these people are just being targeted. People are going to be appealing to charities in greater numbers and with less resources from the charities, and it's going to be real, real tough times unless we can do something to intervene.
Well,
that's my thought on it, guys. Thank you.
I appreciate it. Thanks for your call, Dave. Mr. Stoops, I'm just trying to understand. You originally said that homelessness really became a problem 25 years ago. I assume that would be with the presidency of Ronald Reagan?
Yes, and in the, you know, before 1980, there were homeless people, of course, but it was primarily the mentally ill that were released from the state hospitals, or the alcoholic men that you would find in the Skid Row areas of the urban centers of America. When Ronald Reagan became president, similar to this current president, he was very popular. He proposed tax cuts. He proposed cutting domestic programs. And Ronald Reagan proposed cutting the federal housing budget of the U.S. Department of HUD by 75%. And unfortunately,
Excuse me, 75%, three quarters.
75% of the federal housing budget was proposed to be cut by President Reagan, and the Democrats, who were in control of Congress at that time, went along with the cuts because Reagan was so popular. And that's when we started to see more men than women. And in, around 1984, 85, we started to see families for the first time. And so Ronald Reagan, I'm sorry that he passed away, but Ronald Reagan did a lot of damage to poor people in this country by creating a system where there was no safety net for people to go.
Let me ask you this, because I think it's a lot of people, a lot of us who have homes, haven't really sat down and talked with a homeless person for any length of time. How do people arrive at this situation? I mean, is it people who simply haven't made enough money? Is it people who are mentally ill, who are addicted to substances? How do people arrive homeless, at homelessness?
Well, for every homeless person, there's a different cause for their homelessness, but there's some similarities. We have found, and studies have found, that the lack of affordable housing is the number one cause of homelessness. Substance abuse is a major problem. It affects at least 40% of the homeless population, and sometimes people, they start to abuse substances after they become homeless. The mentally ill make up about 30%. Some of my liberal friends like to blame Ronald Reagan for throwing the mentally ill out on the streets. He did that when he was governor, like most governors in the 60s and 70s. But the mentally ill have been out there for the last 40, 50 years, and we simply don't have we don't want to spend the money, I think, to bring the mentally ill inside.
Now, you mentioned that the churches and synagogues and all are just not doing enough.
Well, you know, President Bush has talked a lot about faith-based programs.
Right.
I can tell you that the churches, the temples, the mosques, the synagogues are already most of them are already involved in some sort of ministry program, and there's probably some that aren't doing anything here at home but only overseas that could get involved. The churches and faith-based organizations and synagogues will have to decide, do they, like they did in the 80s, should they open up their doors as shelters or soup kitchens? And I would say the answer, yes, they should, because there's a need for those Band-Aid type programs. But at the same time, we should use the political clout of our religious institutions to lobby to make sure that the Bush administration doesn't get away with cutting programs that help poor people.
Mr. Stoops, we have to take a commercial break. If you want to join in this discussion, all you have to do is pick up the phone and dial toll-free, 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. It's an important topic. When we come back, I want to ask Mr. Stoops the question that I think we all face when we walk past someone who's homeless. Should we give them money? Should we point out that there's a shelter nearby? What is the right moral thing to do when you pass a homeless person on the street? Call in, give your opinion, 877-57-SCOOP. We'll be right back with more of the Inside Scoop right after this.
You do teach basic ethics to your children, don't you? You know, the difference between right and wrong. For example, I'm sure you teach them that if they get caught violating a family rule, they shouldn't suffer any consequences, but instead should simply be allowed to change that rule to fit their circumstance. Luckily, you can now hold up Tom DeLay as the role model for your children on this ethical twist. DeLay, the Republican majority leader, keeps smashing into our society's rules with his bullying techniques and constant grabs for more political power for himself and his party. Twice this year, he's been brought up on serious ethical violations, but in both cases, he managed to have his behavior reviewed by the toothless, gutless House Ethics Committee, rather than an outside independent investigator. So he got away with what amounts to, "Please don't do that again, Tom." But now, he faces the real possibility of his ethics being judged outside his own little playhouse. A Texas grand jury has already indicted three of his top aides for laundering illegal corporate campaign funds, and DeLay could be next. His legal problems aside, an indictment would cause a big political problem for Tom, since his own party's rules in Congress require that any leader who gets indicted must resign from the leadership post. But old Tom didn't get where he is by playing by anyone's fussy rules. So, in his words, he simply, quote, "fixed the rules." As their very first order of business following the November election, the Republican House caucus dutifully acted to shield their leader by scrapping that pesky ethics rule that would have forced DeLay to step down. As a result, even if he is indicted, he'll still be up there as the House Majority Leader, an ethical model for all our nation's children. This is Jim Hightower saying, actually, having an indicted man as the poster boy of the House Republicans might just be a very appropriate symbol.
If you've been thinking about consolidating your federal student loans, it's time to call College Loan Corporation at 1-800-2-COLLEGE. You'll quickly be connected to an expert loan consultant who will explain the benefits of the consolidation program, including locking in the lowest rate in history, reducing your current monthly payment by up to 58%, and cutting down multiple payments into one simple check. For more information, call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. That's 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
One in four adults has high blood pressure. If you're one of them and you have a cold, Coricidin HBP has surprising news for you. The American Heart Association recognizes that decongestants found in many leading cold medicines can raise your blood pressure and interfere with blood pressure medication. So why risk it? Only decongestant-free Coricidin HBP provides a line of safe, powerful cold and flu medication specially formulated for people with high blood pressure. So make the safe choice. Coricidin HBP. Use as directed.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. We're talking about homelessness with the executive director of the National Coalition for the Homeless. His name is Michael Stoops. And we've been talking about how homelessness has been increasing and how the government's doing very little to stop it, and also what you should do if you pass by a homeless person. Let me go to the phones. If you want to call in, toll-free number 877-57-SCOOP. Caller, you're on the line with Mark Levine and Michael Stoops.
This is Bill from Falls Church.
Hi, Bill.
Hi, Bill.
I'd like to ask your guest about something I read recently. It seems that there was an article I read in the Wall Street Journal about the fact that they are hiring homeless people in California to count homeless people for the purpose of getting government money. How does that work? And by hiring the homeless people to do that, are we using the funds frivolously, so to speak, instead of using the funds for food and shelter for the homeless?
Okay, Mr. Stoops?
Well, Americans always want to know how many homeless people there are, and I can tell you in the 1980s we would have estimates because nobody really knew for sure. The U.S. Census Bureau, and they have since 1980, have done their decade count of the entire population and also a count of the homeless population. The U.S. Department of HUD, the Federal Housing Agency, requires local communities to do a point-in-time count. And who better to count homeless people than homeless people themselves. And this money is coming out of different pots of money that would not be used for food and shelter. I could come to any city and I could count, you know, the number of people in shelters and the number of beds that are full, the ones that are empty, and the occasional visible person on the street. But there's a lot of homeless people that live in very hidden, undisclosed locations, similar to Vice President Cheney. And homeless people know that. They have the trust, and they can, I think it's an appropriate use of money to hire people who are currently or formerly homeless to go out and count the homeless population.
You disagree, Bill?
No, now that he's explained it to me, I think it's a good idea. I'd like to know also if he could tell me where do the homeless people get the best attention and where do they get the worst attention?
In other words, what states and cities?
Would I want to move to California or would I want to move to Mississippi?
Well, the National Coalition for the Homeless, we do an annual report in which on the civil rights issues, cities cracking down on the homeless population, people being arrested for sleeping, camping, even though there's no city in the country with an adequate number of shelter beds. Every year we rank the meanest cities in terms of civil rights issue. Little Rock, Arkansas was ranked number one last year. And so we always get asked, well, if there's all these mean cities, is there a nice city? Like Ronald Reagan used to talk about the shiny city on the hill. The bottom line is that all cities are mean towards homeless people. There are good programs in every city that help homeless people, and there are good citizens that are working as volunteers, as professional staff people, but there's no one mecca that is doing everything that right to address the city's poverty population.
Thank you for your call, Bill. I guess part of my question would be that a lot of cities may be concerned that if they're too kind to the homeless, that suddenly there'll be an influx, and their taxpayers will be asked to pay for it. I mean, for example, San Francisco, I would suspect, is better than others because it's a liberal city, but it has very little room, and I'm sure they're afraid, oh, well, all the people from Little Rock will come here.
Mm-hmm. Well, over the years, I've heard many mayors and city commissioners say that their city is the mecca for the homeless, the magnet that people come from all over to sleep in a shelter in San Francisco. Homeless people don't travel as much as they used to. Anybody who travels the interstates, you don't see many people hitchhiking. There are still people who hop freight trains, but that is going down in terms of sheer numbers. So people do not go from city to city to take advantage of homeless services because they're not getting money. They're just getting a place to sleep. People do go from city to city looking for work or an area where there's not as much crime or cheaper housing. A lot of cities are afraid, like Key West, Florida, which has been on our mean city list for the last 3 years, since 1990, they refused to open up a shelter because they were afraid, because of the wonderful climate in Key West, that if they built a shelter, that it would attract homeless people from other parts of the country. And there could be a little bit of truth to that, but for the most part, people are not going to go halfway across the country to sleep on a shelter floor.
Let me ask you this. What is a shelter like? I have many listeners who have never been. I have been to a homeless shelter, and I've seen a soup kitchen as well, though I'm sure they're very differing in quality across the nation. What does a homeless person get? I mean, for example, I live in Washington, D.C., and I see, even on the coldest snowy night, I see homeless people bundled up in blankets and jackets, and I think to myself, why aren't they in a shelter? Why aren't they in a shelter?
Well, there's not enough room. You know, we always think there's room at the inn, especially during the holiday times or the cold season. Here in Washington, D.C., and as in most cities, during the winter months, anybody who wants shelter can get into a shelter. It might be a floor space. It might be a dormitory room with another 100 men or women. Shelters do what they do best is provide people with three hots and a cot, or some of the faith-based programs. You get the four S's of life, soup, soap, sleep, salvation. A lot of I would say half of the shelters in this country just focus in on the basics, but the other half, many of the secular shelters that believe in social work and case management, job counseling, half of the shelters have professionalized their services. So it all depends on the philosophy of the shelter and the program. Some shelters are better at helping people get off the streets, and others are just like maintaining the homeless population, that someone could stay at a shelter for 10 years and still be homeless.
What would help someone get off the street? Job training, literacy classes, what kinds of things?
Well, Ronald Reagan once said, and it's the only thing I've ever agreed with him, he said once that the best social program is offering people employment. Half of the homeless population are able-bodied mentally and physically, and all they need is a job that pays a living wage, and they can make it on their own. The other half are going to need some intensive counseling, supportive services. And we have found in studies that when a person is put into a permanent housing situation and they get all the supportive counseling services they need, the success rate for single people is around 60%, and for families, the success rate is 76%. And people are not homeless forever. The average amount of time is from 6 to 8 months. And so we know what we're doing, we think, in terms of helping people. But people need more than food and shelter. They need subsidized housing. They need treatment on demand. They need medical care. They need jobs that pay a decent wage.
Now, when I go and I say these things, and I do debates all the time with Bush administration officials, their response is always, well, you know, that's their problem. Let people get off their duff and help themselves. If they're able-bodied, they should go get a job and not expect me working hard to pay for them. They're lazy. It's amazing the kind of vitriol I hear sometimes focused on homeless people. The image that Ronald Reagan used to use of the welfare queen, someone who I guess sits home and I had one guy tell me, I just had a debate just the other day with a Bush administration official, and he said, oh, well, people are sitting at home watching soap operas all day expecting us to pay for them. How much of that stereotype is true, people who are just lazy, and how much of it is false, and how can we show people that it's false?
But the former mayor of Atlanta, the UN ambassador, Andrew Young, once said that the way Americans talk about homeless people in terms of myths and stereotypes reminded him how people used to talk about American Negroes in the 1940s and 50s. Today, homeless people are misunderstood, and there's a lot of myths that people have about homeless people. And the late Ronald Reagan contributed to that when he said that, you know, homeless people chose to be homeless. He said that homeless people were not homeless. They were just camping. His Attorney General Edwin Meese said that the reason the soup lines were getting longer in the 80s was because people were just trying to save money so they can eat at a restaurant that night. So people say a lot of dumb things and wrong things about homeless people, and they're simply not – you can always find someone that meets the stereotype, but for the overwhelming majority of homeless people, they are just like you and me.
Well, one of the things I found that you said is very interesting that I hadn't heard before is when you said that the average time is 6 to 8 months. How much of the 800,000, which was the number you gave, of homeless in the United States, how many of them are long-term homeless, let's say homeless for more than 2 years, and how many of them are short-term homeless, people who fell out of the system, lost a job, can't earn enough to live at home?
The reason the homeless population continues to grow, even though we have some good model programs, is that a lot of people are not getting out of homelessness, and they're actually a new segment of the homeless population is the elderly homeless. You go to any shelter, you'll see a lot of men and women in their 50s and 60s who are homeless. So it's happening to a lot of people, and people are having a hard time breaking out of that vicious cycle of homelessness.
Do we know how many are long-term and short-term? Can we measure that?
The Bush administration has they've labeled the long-term homeless the chronic homeless population, and they say that 10% of the homeless population are the long-termers, and that they use up too many of our resources. But
it's interesting to me is that 90% are short-termers. That means
right.
If we had services, these are people who are just falling out of the system that we can help put back in the system.
Right. The longer someone is homeless, the harder it is to get out because you start to lose your self-esteem.
Yeah.
Imagine if you're on a street corner and 1,000 people walk by you every day, how that affects your self-esteem. And that's why it's important to prevent people from becoming homeless in the first place. So if a family's about to be evicted for non-payment of rent because they don't have a good job, maybe we should try to keep that family in their apartment to give them on a one-time only basis the money to pay their landlord, give them the counseling to find out what was it that got them into this predicament, rather than making a family become homeless and going through our inadequate emergency shelter system.
Let me go to the phones again. Caller, you're on the line with Mark Levine and Michael Stoops.
Hi, Mark. It's Rod from New York.
Hey, Rod. How are you?
I'm great, and thank you, Mr. Stoops, for putting the word myth to the idea of a welfare queen. It's amazing how these neocons will defend to the death these corporate crooks, but they indict the entire welfare system for helping out people in real need.
Yeah, Rod, I've always found it's very interesting. It's Paul Bremer loses $8.8 billion in Iraq. Yeah. Halliburton loses $13 billion. And it's like, that's okay. But, a poor person took two bowls of soup today.
Oh.
They should get in trouble.
Incredible.
Do you have a further question?
Yes. And not only that, Mark, you had mentioned that you see, the dead bitter of winter.
Yeah.
People out, maybe even right outside of a shelter shivering, and you're asking yourself, why don't they go in there?
Yeah.
Well, I'd ask Mr. Stoops to address the high amount of crime that goes on. In fact, beatings and rapes that go on in the shelters.
That's a great question. Mr. Stoops, are the shelters unsafe?
I've stayed in just about every shelter in this country. And
wow.
Some shelters are kind of scary when you have like 1,000 people living in a gymnasium, but for the most part, the worst thing that could happen to you in a shelter, you might get your coat stolen or your shoes taken. Shelters are staffed; some have security guards. The real crime happens outside. Living outside in this country is no longer safe, and there's been a growth in hate crimes and violence against homeless people by teenagers around the country who decide to go pick on the homeless person who's on the street. And so it's dangerous living outside the shelters. A shelter is not a home, and that's why a lot of homeless people don't want to stay in shelters. They're like institutions. And I have people here in Washington, D.C. that it's been really, really cold this winter, and I've offered if they would like a bus ticket to go south for the winter, and they always tell me no because they might not have a roof over their head, but this is their home. This is where they have friends and family. They have a routine. They know where the soup kitchens are, and they prefer to be here even during the harsh winter season.
Rod, do you have a further comment?
No. What I understood about the shelter system is that like you're saying, there's a lot of people released from mental hospitals and ex-cons that can't get work, and it's a dangerous place sometimes. I mean,
so I guess, Mr. Stoops, you're saying that as dangerous as a shelter can be, it's far more dangerous out in the streets.
For sure, and the shelters. A lot of my homeless friends sometimes paint the pictures of shelters that you're going to get raped and robbed and murdered. Shelters are not like prisons or anything like that. But sometimes some of my homeless friends will paint shelters as being horrible places.
Do you think they do that because they like the freedom of not being told to sleep at a certain time, no rules? They just...
Well, imagine if you're a 50-year-old man and you're told to go to a shelter and there's time for lights out. They wake you up at 5 in the morning. Some of the old-fashioned rescue missions, even if you're not religious or you happen to be have a religion other than Christianity, you're still required to sit through a church service before you get help.
Now, let me ask you specifically about this, because I actually had a discussion just about a month or two ago. In fact, it occurred on my blog at RadioInsideScoop.com with a woman who listens to my show a lot. She's a very Christian, very strong believer, she and I were talking about the Salvation Army. And I was saying that I wasn't a big fan of the Salvation Army because although they certainly do some good, I didn't like that they sort of tied it all to salvation and church services, and that's why I gave to Goodwill, which I felt was cared for the poor and didn't try to make them believe a certain thing. Let me just get it clear, and I think you'd probably know more than she or I. Does the Salvation Army try to... I don't know if the word convert is the right reason, but do you have to sit through a church service in order to get food? Is that how it works?
In my travels, there are some Salvation Armies. It all depends on who's in charge, the captain and Mrs. Captain. Some Salvation Armies require religious services. Others don't. And it depends on your local Salvation Army.
Well, then we're both right, because I thought they did and she thought they didn't. So
right.
I guess the answer is it depends on your local Salvation Army. Rod, anything else?
No, actually, one last thing, and then I'll let you go. What is the status of drug and alcohol programs in these
in the shelters?
Yeah,
good question, Mr. Stoops.
Thanks again. I'll
thank you, Rob.
Thank you, Rob. Shelters are drug and alcohol free for the most part. If someone is trying to get off drugs or alcohol, it's really hard when you're homeless because at least 40% of homeless folks have a substance abuse problem, but there's not enough detox facilities available on a long term. And when someone gets out of detox, they're back on the streets with their friends that are still using. If someone is lucky enough to get into a 30-day treatment program that's funded by somebody else, and if they're released back to the streets, it's likely that there's going to be a relapse. And there's a big debate, does substance abuse cause someone to become homeless, or do they develop it after they're on the streets? I think there's a little bit of both happens among the homeless population.
We have to take another break. If you want to call in, the toll-free number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP, or you can certainly comment on the blog at radioinsidescoop.com. We'll be right back with more of the Inside Scoop right after these messages.
Federal student loans. It's time to call College Loan Corporation at 1-800-2-COLLEGE. You'll quickly be connected to an expert loan consultant who will explain the benefits of the consolidation program, including locking in the lowest rate in history, reducing your current monthly payment by up to 58%, and cutting down multiple payments into one simple check. For more information, call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. That's 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make. This is a financial update. Average mortgage rates took a slight dip this week.
Sorry to interrupt, but LendingTree.com is the only place where banks compete over your mortgage. Then you get up to 4 real offers to choose from within minutes. So do better and choose from low rates.
Everything. Languages? Yes. Boiling points? Celsius and Fahrenheit? Yes. World capitals? Please. Do you know what the population of Liechtenstein is? Huh? Do you? Ha ha ha! She didn't.
Get in the know. Check out ScorePower from Equifax. You'll get your credit report, credit score, and you'll learn how your credit decisions can affect your score, all for only $14.95. And knowing that is how you get the credit you deserve. So check out ScorePower at Equifax.com or call 1-877-4-EQUIFAX. That's EQUIFAX. Equifax.
Well, now I have my credit score up to 760, the same number of days it took Frenchman Michel Lapointe to circle the globe on a bike. Yeah, I'll bet you didn't know that.
Get the power. Score power.
A message from the American Library Association and Bernie Mac about the hard times facing our nation's libraries.
Hey, I'm Bernie Mac. The libraries need your help. Many are forced to cut back hours, reduce services, and even find out how you can make a difference in your community. The future is at your library, so make sure your library has a future. Just a little something from the Mac Man.
Brought to you by the Campaign for America's Libraries. For more information, visit the American Library Association website, .org.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. My guest is Michael Stoops. He's the executive director of the National Coalition for the Homeless, and we're talking about the homeless problem in America, what causes it, who are the homeless, and what we can do about it. We're taking your calls at 877-57-SCOOP, and some of you may want to write in on the blog. All you do is write to www.radioinsidescoop.com. Mr. Stoops, I want to read to you someone who puts his name as G.I. Joe. He writes, Filipino veterans of Vietnam received houses when they returned from duty. If Paul Bremer can throw away $7 billion in Baghdad, maybe returning CIB should receive houses when they return from duty. See, this is where flag-waving Republicans drop their voices. No money for vets unless they die in combat. How many of our homeless are vets of all our wars? Talk to them about the price of patriotism after the government has chewed them up and spit them out. Roll back those rich man tax cuts and those people with homes. I don't know what percentage are vets. I assume it's 11% sounds about right. Why aren't veterans better taken care of? Aren't there federal programs specifically for veterans to keep them from being homeless?
Well, in every state in this country, they're generally called provide housing for homeless veterans. There's a few. There's a place in Baltimore. There's one and he's 80 years of age, and he is a veteran. He lives right across the street in Lafayette Park. He camps out by the war memorials in the wars in which he fought. He's a World War II veteran, a Korean veteran. Problem of not caring for our veterans is happening again. And he believes, and I believe, that anybody who serves our country in a combat zone, when they come home from the war after seeing and dealing with the horrors of war, and many of my friends get drug and alcohol addicted in the military, they come back, they can't find work, and they become homeless. And I think that we need to make a commitment that we don't allow veterans to become homeless from our two current wars, and that should be a common ground for everybody who's either for the war or against the war.
I certainly agree with you, and I certainly know my history. GI Bill, the idea that if you fought for your country in war, you could come back, you could get a government-funded education, and get a real chance to get a decent, good job in America. Does the GI Bill still exist? Can people still use that, or is that gone now?
Well, you know, people, you see the recruitment ads, you know, to a college education, and when you do get out, the benefit levels are not the same as they were my parents' and grandparents' generations.
I mean, I know back in the 1940s, if you served your country in World War II, you could get an entire 4 years of college paid for at the outset, because it's one that, frankly, I'm affected by, virtually everyone is, and I do have a home. When you walk by, what would you, you know, a good liberal person like myself, or many of my listeners, you're walking by a homeless person, he or she is shivering in the streets, you know, with a cup, they want some change. I don't know, there's the fear, your heart says you want to give them some money, on the other hand, there's fear that they might just use it to buy alcohol, that maybe the people who are aggressively asking for funds may not be the right people to give, maybe we should give it to charities instead, United Way or Goodwill. What's your view on that?
Well, if you wanted to give $5 to the National Coalition, I would take it, and you else of a homeless person, so we support the right of people to ask for change on the street. And we support the right of people to give or not to give. The bottom line, in downtown America, you walk by so many people, 10 different people asking for money. And you're going to walk by the same people every day. And I think give someone eye contact, nod, a smile, even if you don't give them money, my homeless friends say that that means a lot to them. And then maybe get to know their name and buy them a cup of coffee. And when you give to a homeless person, I really don't think we have a right to question what they're going to do with their money. When I see someone coming out of a Starbucks and they've just bought a $3 to $5 latte, and a homeless person asks for a quarter as if they get the attitude that they're asking for way too much. So I think it's okay to give. If I think that someone's been drinking and it's really, really cold out, you're not doing anybody a favor giving them money to buy more alcohol. I like to give the people who don't ask, and I frequently put anonymously $5 bills underneath someone's cardboard, and when they wake up in the morning, they think that Bill Gates came by.
That's a nice idea. A good friend of mine convinced me of this some years ago, and what she said is that she likes to give homeless people food. She feels like it's not something they're going to throw away on alcohol or drugs, and it's something they can use. And so one thing that she always does, and I've started to do, is when I'm in a restaurant, whether I like the meal or not, actually, particularly if I don't like the meal, I always get it wrapped up to go. They're just going to throw it away. And then when I go home, on my way home, I give it to a homeless person. And that's that way I feel like I'm giving them food. Right. It's certainly not a single penny from me. And maybe that's something we could encourage our listeners to do as well.
Yeah, I think it's hard to get, you know, forget about getting three hot meals a day when you're homeless anywhere in America. So giving people food or getting food coupons at McDonald's or Burger King is really important. One thing that I always do here in Washington, D.C., many of the restrooms are locked at fast food restaurants, and you need a token. And I always ask for an extra token. And when I leave the restaurant, I give it to that homeless Joe on the corner. And there's a Kinko's in downtown Washington. I know the combination to their restroom. And I'm always giving out that combination lock, because if you don't have any money, where do you go to the bathroom? You know you're homeless when you try to walk into a Hilton hotel to use the restroom. You won't get 10 feet within the Hilton without being run out of the hotel.
The toll-free number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. I want to change the topic. Well, not really changing the topic, but bring up a new topic, Mr. Stoops, and that's the topic of domestic violence. I know that there are a lot of poor women in the country that might have families, 2-3 children, and their job is in the home raising those kids. But if they're getting beaten up by their husband every night and he's the only one with a job, they have trouble. I mean, they can try to leave their kids and go to a battered women's shelter. Are there enough battered women's shelters out there?
No, there's not. Generally, in just about every county in this country, there's a domestic violence shelter, but in some rural areas, that one domestic violence shelter serves a 5 or 6 county area, and they're always full. About 25% of the homeless women are homeless because of domestic violence, and I've always thought that, you know, it's kind of crazy when a man, and it's generally a man, hits his wife or spouse, and the wife and the children have to leave to go
Absolutely. I've always felt
instead of having
make
shelters,
him leave.
Yeah, we should have shelters for batterers.
Yeah, we should have prisons for batterers and let the women and the children stay in the
right.
home. I've always felt that if there's proof of battery,
right.
if there's proof of domestic violence, a woman should be able to sue, take the home, she can live in the home, and he can go live in the street. I have much, much less sympathy for him than for her.
I would love to run a shelter for batterers. I think there's a great need for that.
Well, I know you have a very strong point. One of the things that I've been reading about, and that I have a good friend who actually works helping women who suffer from domestic violence. She told me about a certain counting program the Bush administration is starting to set up where I guess the intent is good. We all want to sort of get a count on the homeless, but they're asking so many specific details of Social Security numbers and names and addresses that it makes it really easy for stalkers to find battered women, and so there's some resistance there. Can you tell me what's going on with that?
Well,
do you know about this?
Yes. The Bush administration and the U.S. Department of HUD and Health and Human Services have a system called the Homelessness Management Information System, where everything's computerized, and they ask all these questions, and it makes it easier for to maybe help people, but the client is giving so much information, and most shelters in this country, I would not want to reveal any confidential information because a lot of the counselors are not professionally trained, and the system is pretty non-professional for the most part. So it's an issue, and a lot of domestic violence shelters are no longer secret locations in many cities that everybody knows where the DV shelter is, and it's easy to, but with fences and security systems, shelters can protect their women and children that are inside the perimeter of the shelter facility.
Let's do it. We're going to take one more very quick commercial break, then we'll come back and wrap up. There's still time for one more call. The lines are open if you want to call in. 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. We'll be right back after this short message.
Pet satisfaction rating 3%. Your hairdresser doesn't know burnt auburn from burnt toast. Hair color satisfaction rating 5%. After years of marriage, your husband still leaves the seat up. Spouse satisfaction rating minus 2%. Your car insurance company saves you hundreds of dollars and handles your claim quickly and fairly. Car insurance satisfaction rating 97%. Oh, you must have Geico.
Geico's customer satisfaction stands at 97%. How would you rate your car insurance company? Geico. 1-800-947-AUTO.
It's night. You have heartburn. You want fast relief. Zantac works fast. When first used, Prilosec OTC works not so fast. Zantac works right when you need it.
Hello, relief.
Prilosec's label says it may take 1 to 4 days to fully work. So, what would you choose?
Estimated time of relief, 1 to 4 days.
Prilosec, nah. Zantac's for people who hate to wait, especially at night. Use as directed.
I have these nightmares. This taco, not just an ordinary taco, but this big evil taco is haunting me.
Guacamole.
You see, I was exposed to credit cards in college, and I wasn't the most responsible person back then.
Go, go, go!
I mean, I heard the words credit card and thought, hey, hey, free money! Plane ticket to spring break? Credit card. New skis? Credit card. 135 taco dinners? Bam! Credit card. But hey, it's not too late to do something about your credit. Get ScorePower from Equifax.com. ScorePower gives you your credit report, credit score, and it puts you on the road toward the credit you deserve for just $14.95. So, check out Equifax.com today and get that taco you ate 7 years ago out of your life.
Get ScorePower at Equifax.com or 1-877-4-EQUIFAX. That's EQUIFAX. Equifax.
Adios, taco.
Get the power. ScorePower.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. We only have a few minutes left with Michael Stoops, the Executive Director of the National Coalition for the Homeless. And I guess I'd like to conclude by finding out really what people should do. Mr. Stoops, I'm sure your organization could use funds to help the homeless. What do you do at your organization specifically to help the homeless?
The National Coalition for the Homeless is the nation's oldest and largest national advocacy organization. Our goal is to end homelessness. We work on the issues of civil rights, housing, health care, living wage, jobs. We lobby, we litigate, we organize, we do research, we educate the public. We do nonpartisan voter registration. We registered 100,000 homeless people to vote in the last election in cities across this country. Homelessness is not a new issue. I think it's important for Americans to continue to volunteer at shelters and soup kitchens, to donate money, to learn about homelessness. But if we're ever going to end homelessness, we need to tackle the root causes of poverty in this country so that we can end it because we have the resources available. So we're not going to do it overnight, and that's why many cities are developing 10-year plans. We need additional resources, both people power, material donations, financial donations, but we need to create the political will on the grassroots level for ending homelessness. And while we're trying to end homelessness in our big cities, we can continue to work helping individual homeless people get off the streets.
And your website is what?
Our website is nationalhomeless.org.
Nationalhomeless.org.
Right.
I should note that one person wrote here on the blog to mention the work of City Harvest, which they commend. Do you have any experience with the City Harvest?
No, I don't. It sounds like a food bank, a local food bank.
They're in New York City they're from.
Okay, I've heard good things about it. There's a lot of good agencies and people helping the poor, and if people need help, if they don't know the name of a local organization where they would like to volunteer, they can contact the National Coalition, and we will put them in touch with a group in New York City or wherever.
Now, one of the things you said is that one of the best ways to fight homelessness is to really fight poverty, to fight the root conditions. What would most help? Minimum wage increases, housing programs, jobs programs? If you could get one or two things.
I would say we need to create more subsidized housing. The Bush administration is on this home ownership kick, but it's not for homeless people. We need to create more subsidized housing where you only pay a maximum of 30% of your income for rent, and we need more subsidized apartments and home ownership opportunities for low-income Americans. So I would say housing is really the thing that we need to focus in on. But the Bush administration is planning to cut the HUD budget by billions.
By billions, the Department of Housing and Urban Development.
Yes.
Mr. Stoops, it's been a very quick hour. I really appreciate the work that you have devoted yourself to. It's really amazing, I think, and a real giving act on your part, and I hope that our listeners have learned a lot this hour. Thank you very much for coming here on The Inside Scoop.
You asked good questions.
Thank you. I do want to conclude. I've got a minute left with my own statement, and that is that I'm a student of history, and I can I know from history that when immigrants first came to this country, way back in the 1800s, we had something called the Homestead Act. And we had a lot of room in this country, had a lot of empty land. And so for a dollar, you could go, and sometimes it didn't even cost a dollar. The government would give you a amount of land, and you could go and you could homestead on that land, build your own house. I think we need a new Homestead Act in this country. I think that if you give people we have empty land, we have empty property, we could even take shelters. Just give people a small amount, tell them they have to keep it up. If they don't keep it up, we can take it away. But we are a very rich country, and every American should be able to afford basic food, shelter, and health care, and then let them rise or fall as they may. And my belief is that if you give people a chance to make it out of poverty, they will be so thankful that they will also give back to